Accession number 16790, Realty.
Mr. Stockbridge, hello.
We could see the Chinese and they appeared to be everywhere. Then I heard this mortar bomb go off. I heard the second one, it got closer, and I knew the third one was going to hit the truck. And I just said a quick little prayer, and the third one hit the front of the truck. And the truck rocked, and it knocked me out for the minute. And I was sat next to a chap called Joe Cruz, Joe Belsey, who was a corporal. And I was leant up against him, and when I come to, I said, "Are you all right, Joe?" And I looked at him, and he was sat there, and I could just see a big hole in the middle of his head. And we just sat there firing back until Joe Cruz, the other corporal who was left, said, "Off the truck." And I remember diving from one side of the truck to come down behind it, right across and off the other side. And at that stage, we discovered that the driver was dead. The chap that we'd put on the Corporal Hill, who we'd put on the stretcher on the back, had called it up again. A chap called Joe McCourt. He had about 5 bullets go through him. He was dead. And Joe Belsey, who I was leant up against, he was dead. So we regrouped by the side of the truck, and Chinese were everywhere. And there was a little track there. None of us could drive anyway, so we couldn't, if we could have got the truck going, we couldn't have driven it. In fact, I'm sure it was out of action because the third mortar bomb hit the front of it. We went down this little track. I remember being in front with Joe Cruz, the corporal. And we could hear the Chinese talking through the hedge. We got so far and we couldn't get any further. And he said, "What shall I do?" And I said, "Shoot him." Seemed to be my favourite saying. And he shot into the hedge. And the noise stopped. And we knew we couldn't go forward. We couldn't get out that way. So we turned around. I said, "Come on." And we went back up this track so far. I thought, well, we can't go to our left because that's where all the Chinese were mostly dug in. And to our right was the river. It was all frozen over. But there was barbed wire. But they hadn't made too good a job of putting it there, the Chinese, to cut us off. So we decided we're going that way. So we went through straight for the barbed wire, and somehow we got through it. I remember getting tangled up in it going, and then an American said to me just before that, "Can I come along with you guys?" I said, "Yeah, if you can keep up." So he came under, because he was a bit on the tubby side. And he came with us, and we went straight up the mountain to the other side. We got through the river, which was frozen over, and through this barbed wire, and we went straight up away from the Chinese. Then we could see trucks burning and everything down below. It was chaos. Trucks burning, Chinese. Typical battle, everything. So we listened for the sound. We knew the direction where the other trucks had gone. We could either go back or go forward. So we decided to go forward where the gunfire was coming from across country. So that's what we did. And we kept stopping in the night and bumping Chinese. And there was 7 of us, I think, all together. And it was so cold. And we hadn't had any sleep the night before. And when you're fighting, it's very exhausting. And come about 2 o'clock in the morning, 2, 3 o'clock, you stand up and look and decide which way you were going. And you start falling over with the cold. Start falling asleep, standing up. Anyway, we kept going in the direction. And it was just getting dawn was near enough breaking, and this river was, there was water and flowing, and we had to cross it, or I went to go around the edge of it, and I slipped off the bank into it. And I think the others done the same as well. And then we could see something up ahead, like a camp, you know. I thought, well, we were so exhausted in that, and I thought, well, if it's even if it's Chinese, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, you got to that stage. But this Yank shouted out, and there was two Yanks on guard, and they screamed at me to stop. And I looked down, and there was a couple of hand grenades in tins with a wire going across. You know, well, just didn't care. He just stepped over it, you know, and went in. And we got into Agaruri, actually, into the camp where the others had got. But this was just as dawn was breaking. And I can remember going in there and seeing all these blokes under blankets, rows of them. You know, and I said, what are these silly so-and-so sleeping out for? And of course, they were all dead Americans. And there was Chinese. I suppose they were piled half the height of this room, all frozen, you know, just piles of them. I've never seen so many dead bodies. And we went into this tent, and I got my boots off, and we took them off because our feet were cold in there, you know. My socks were frozen on. And we had to see the doc or something then, you know, and they got us on stretchers, and that was it, you know. And I was flown out a couple of days later.
In what condition were you in?
I had frostbite pretty bad on my feet. But you get blisters come up, big black blisters, you know, they turn black, green, and that was in, I think, the beginning of December. I was flown out, 1st or 2nd of December I was flown back. Now, before then, the Chinese used to attack the camp every night, and I was on a stretcher there in this shack, and I can remember the first night, all the windows and everything being blown in. Because there was just shelling and everything going on. All hell broke loose at night there. You know, the Chinese just used to keep attacking. And I can remember one of my chums, Curly Hayes, he's dead now. He, I suppose he was leaning up on his stretcher and he got hit. I remember bandaging him up. And I can remember Drysdale coming round to see us in the morning, the following morning. And he'd been wounded in the arm as well. And him in the 2IC, Major Aldridge. But I was then flown down to Ham Hung, where this chap gave me a cup of coffee, or gave me a tin of coffee, which tasted a bit salty, and I look around and I see somebody else using another tin to pass water in. And this photographer took my photograph and sent it across to the War Office, who sent it to the Admiralty, who in turn sent it to my mother. And I only discovered about 6 years ago when I got it that there was a letter in the back from the photographer.
What did you think to the way in which the Chinese fought?
I think they were worse off than us, but they did as they were told. They had on blanket type, more like quilt type coats, which must have been better than what we were wearing, you know. I have my battle dress on and long johns, etc., underneath, but nothing keeps the cold out, really.
You, when you said that you bumped the Chinese on that escape from the ambush, you mean individual Chinese?
No, there was several of them. Some of them had pack mules as well. You know, there was groups of them during the night going back. Quite a lot of Chinese about, you know, and we just avoided them because there was only seven of us. And
who was the most senior with you?
Corporal Cruz at the time, yeah, Joe Cruz. I think he was about 23 years old, maybe a bit less than that, 22 or 23. I was 18 at the time. We were all around about that age group.
How frightening was it on that escape?
You're never frightened at the time. You're so busy, you don't get time to be frightened. Not even when I sat on the truck and I knew the third bomb was going to hit the truck. And I just said a little prayer and I wasn't frightened.
Was it agricultural land or just bare?
It was bare. Everything was bare. It was just frozen waste. It was like a valley, really. A big valley, you know. But it was just bare and frozen and freezing. Really cold, you know.
What did the plight of the people cut off at Hagaru seem to be?
They were doing a good job, actually. They had their perimeter out and everything, you know. But they were glad to see us. We had to get through at all costs, and that was it. I know I wasn't much good when we got through, but a lot of the boys were, and they were a big boost for them as well. I can remember sitting in this room, I was waiting to see a doctor, and we had frostbite. And I remember a padre, an American padre, walking up and down, crying, saying, "Oh, we're not going to get out of this, and we're not going to get out of this," you know. And I wanted to ridicule him, really, you know, because we don't think like that.
Seems a bit strange when a padre is supposed to boost
you. Yeah. It reminded me of years later in Suez, when I got ashore there. I can remember going into a room there, and there was a big hole caused by a shell in the wall, and there was a padre in there sweeping up glass, and there was a pram in the corner, and he was the tears were running down his face, you know, and but he didn't make no comment about anything.
Was he British?
He was a British one, yeah. He was one of our family. But I suppose just sweeping up the glass, and that was it, thinking about it.
Anything other things that we've missed out about the push through to Hagaru and your escape from there that we've missed out?
No, they were pretty good. They got the airfield open at Hagaru. The Americans were marvellous there, bulldozing, getting the airfield, keeping that open, because the Chinese were bombing it and mortar bombing it and that, you know, and trying to keep it closed. And I got flown out from there then.
Did you go into action in Korea again after that?
I went back to Korea. I came home in March 1951. And in February 1952, they formed the Birmingham Detachment, and Cruiser was recommissioning. And I went back out in July 1952 and came home in July 1954. So, and my captain of Marines on board when we were back in Japan and the prisoners were being released, and he said, I've just seen some of your friends, like, you know. He was interrogating me, my captain of Marines.
But you didn't go into action in the latter part?
We just fired, we used to fire the old salvos and that, you know, and pound the shores while the war was still going on. But it was, and we did have an alert one day, you know, when they sounded the alert, there's a bomber overhead, you know, and but nothing like going ashore and fighting.
Now, I think that you've already mentioned Suez. Was that the next campaign you were in?
That was the next campaign, yeah.
Can you tell me how you came to be involved in that, please?
Yeah, so I was at Limpston, and which was still the infantry training centre, and we'd read all about Suez and that, and I'd been out with my wife for a drink on the Saturday night and got home, and there was a note tucked in the door by the QMS from Limpston, the duty QMS, which said, look behind the door. And I looked behind the door, and there was another note which said, be packed and ready, the truck will pick you up at 7:15 tomorrow morning. And that was Sunday morning. So, which it did. And I was sent down to Plymouth, taken down to Plymouth, where they were getting 4-2 Commando up to strength. And I became part of 4-2 Commando.
What rank did you have by then?
I was still a Marine. Well, I'd been an acting corporal at Limpston, but you lose that rank when you go on draft. So I reverted to Marine. I was heavy weapons still, because you keep that, which was machine guns and mortars. So I got down there, and the officer commanding S Troop was a Captain Robinson, and he was an old ranker, and he'd gone up through the ranks, and he was quite a good chap, actually, you know, not like your commissioned officer. And he invited me to go in the office because their admin was all to cock, he said. And when we got to Suez, I went in with the second wave, actually. You know, you're still going by landing craft, you know, and because I was in the headquarters of S Troop then. Our machine guns and mortars had already gone ashore in the first wave. And I went in on the second wave, and I can remember watching a couple of chaps drop. You know, you see them as you're going up the beach and that, you know, somebody gets hit, they just drop. And there was a big row of beach huts in front of us. This was about 6 o'clock in the morning. And 40 Commando had gone in on our left. And some of the Egyptians had come back round in the beach huts, you know, and there was a bit of firing going on and all that. Nothing too much to worry about, you know, a few bullets were flying around, but nobody got hit then from where we were. And we hung around in the beach area.
Where then exactly did you go ashore?
At Port Said.
Whereabouts exactly?
What do you mean, at Port Said?
Yes.
On 4-2 Commander was on the right. There was a long beach with beach huts the way along, and the statue of Ferdinand de Lesseps and the entrance to the canal was right down to our left, and with the bombardment and that from the ships, they'd already set alight the there was a lot of big black smoke coming up, obviously from oil containers and that. Now, I don't know, with Captain Robinson, he seemed to volunteer for things, and he never invited me to volunteer or anything, but because I think I'd seen action in Korea before. He wanted me with him all the time. And while we were there on the beach, he said, I've just been and seen General Stockwell, he said, and he wants some volunteers to go and get the people out of the French embassy. So he said, you go and get two volunteers from mortars and two from machine guns, he said. And you're coming as well. He didn't invite me to volunteer, but he said, you're coming as well. So I got the volunteers, and we made our way up to our headquarters, which was right down to the left, and you had to go forward a bit in this big building. I forget where it was now, roughly. But on the way up there, I can remember some of the Marines clearing this house, and there was a sniper up in the room. So, and I remember this tank there, and he just pointed his gun at the window where the sniper was firing from, and the room disappeared, and it was left up. I remember that. We went on up a bit further where our brigade headquarters was, and we got this map reference, and we had this tank. We had this tank and this one tonner and the Land Rover, and we went up this road to the French embassy, and we stopped outside of it, and there was, I remember seeing a child's hand come round the hedge and roll a grenade, which went under the truck, and it went off, and the corporal in the back of the truck, a chap called Buck Ryan, went to fire the... Buck Ryan, he was called Buck Ryan, he went to fire the Bren gun into the hedge where the hand had disappeared, and the barrel dropped off the Bren. And I often think about this now. It seems quite funny now, but it wasn't funny at the time. Anyway, we turned round and got out of this area and went back to headquarters and found out that we'd been in the middle of no man's land. They'd given us the wrong map reference. So we got the right one and then went back to the new French embassy and got the people out safely.
What was the effect of the grenade?
It had just damaged under the bottom of the vehicle, had taken the blast of it, you know. No, hadn't done any damage, really.
What did you think about the child's hand delivering the grenade?
Well, it was their country, I suppose, you know. And when you're abroad, a lot of children do the fighting and that. It didn't surprise me, let me put it that way.
You were telling me earlier that there was a failure to armour some of the vehicles, to put armour in.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, some of the amphibian vehicles, which were like empty tanks, really, track vehicles. When we left Malta, everybody thought that it was another exercise, and they didn't have their armour plating with them. Consequently, I think it was a machine gun section, when they went out to the other side of Port Said, made a dash through the streets to take over the school area, some of their track vehicles were like bloodbaths because they only had plywood sides without their protective panels in.
Had you done much fighting yourself after the storming up the beach?
Well, I went in with a second wave, and the only fighting I was involved with was when some of the Egyptians came back round under the beach huts. There were all these, a big two or three rows of beach huts on stilts, which was ideal for snipers and things like this. And there was a few bullets whizzing by, and we returned the fire, and they were cleared after a little while. And that was it. And apart from that, then we just, at the end of that day, we locked ourselves in rooms just off the beach. We'd more or less captured Port Said, with the exception of a few snipers. Then the French Foreign Legion moved through. through and shot anything that moved. And the following morning, I remember when we let ourselves out, I remember seeing dead bodies in that all around this mosque where the Egyptians had used, you know, to fight from. And the day before, I could remember seeing a tank go up the steps into a mosque as well, which was quite something.
Whose tank was that?
One of ours. Centurion. We had three Centurions. They were called Shake, Rattle and Roll. And, very effective.
What did you think of the way the Egyptians fought?
Oh, from what I see, you know, I think they fought quite well. You hear lots of things about how soldiers fight in that, but when you're actually there, they fight. It's different when it's hearsay afterwards, or but at the time when you're actually there, they always fight well. The another thing that happened, the Paras landed at Gamal airstrip, and the opposition that they met there run back into the town in occupied the building, so it's always more difficult house clearing than fighting in open spaces.
You said when you were called to go to Korea, you were quite glad about it. Were you glad to go to Suez?
I think it's when you're young, you don't really know fear. If there's a job to be done, then you want to get on with it and get back home again afterwards, if possible.
How did you feel when it was called off?
We were all pretty mad because we'd done all the hard work then and captured Portsend. It would have been quite easy then to have carried on and gone straight through.
Were you aware of what was happening at the same time in Hungary with the Russians?
I'd read about it in the papers, but I wasn't more concerned with Suez at the time, being involved in it. I can remember, another thing I remember about Suez was I was on a landing craft then at the time, one of the bigger landing crafts that we had. And it was quite a big fleet because we had the French fleet with us and the French aircraft carrier and everything. And I can remember when we were steaming towards Suez, there was an unidentified submarine in the area. And they told it to come up on to surface or take the consequences. And I can remember this American submarine with the Stars and Stripes flying. I remember looking over the side and watching it go down past the other way. It soon surfaced.
Did you see any of the men on board?
Yeah, you could see men as well, yeah. Americans.
What were they doing?
Hmm?
What were
Nothing,
they
you know, just... But they drove straight through the... They sailed straight through the convoy. But on the surface.